Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
You would be on this March 16th, a beautiful day in Los Angeles, and the day before what day?
Is it my birthday tomorrow?
No.
No.
Do I get free cake? St. Patrick's Day.
I'm sorry, the luck of the Irish has left me completely
behind. Luck of the Irish. My mother's birthday
is two days before St. Patrick's Day, so I always have that, got to call mom before I go out and get trashed at one of the bars, you know? But she had a great birthday, and St. Patty's Day is going to be fun this year. There's a lot of stuff coming
up. You think?
Oh, my goodness. I was driving by, and Molly Malone's and a couple other places have huge signs out. They're doing all kinds of specials.
Right.
Great. But Uber. Everybody Uber, please. Don't be driving.
Yes, or Lyft.
Right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
No kidding.
Before we get into the program, let's thank our sponsors, right?
Absolutely.
We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Indeed we are. And in studio with us today, Andrew, are two dynamic talents from the LA theater scene. Let's say hello to the beautiful Grayson Chadwick from the Actors Co-op in Hollywood and David Manville from the Independent Shakespeare Company. Welcome to State of the Arts, guys.
Wow.
They love you.
They flooded our studio audience just to see you guys today.
Oh,
it's unbelievable.
My gosh. We sold tickets yesterday on this, right?
Wait, people had to pay to see?
They did today.
Goodness. We are hitting the big time now, ladies and gentlemen.
No. Anyhow, before we get into this, how was your week, Andrew?
I'm supposed to dazzle you, right, Michael?
Is that what it says?
It says. In my script here, it says, Andrew dazzles. This is going to be a letdown, man. I can tell right off the bat.
It's okay, because mine says, I bore you with my week.
Michael, I got to tell you, I was bored my whole week. I mean, I was inside a cave of a studio working on a project, and then I had three fight classes that I had to run. So it was all inside. I didn't get to see any of the beautiful weather. Of course, when it was raining, I had nothing to do. I could be outside all the time, but it's raining, so I'm sitting there waiting for the rain to stop. And then the time that I have to be buried in studios and theaters and all that, it turns beautiful. So,
well, I... Excuse me. If I lived in Malibu, though,
right.
I would definitely be out in the rain or shine.
As much as I complain, I brought my kiddos home. We turned our rocking chairs around and let the rain fall on that patio. It was pretty tough to complain.
Sweet.
Right?
Did the kids complain that they can't get out in it?
Or? You know, they didn't complain, although you could tell that they were getting cabin fever by the end of it. I've got an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old, and they wrestle pretty frequently. And the 8-year-old girl pretty much could always
take it. They wrestle?
All the time.
With one another?
Yeah, and daddy if he's there, too. So they were wrestling, and the 8-year-old, my daughter used to be able to take my son pretty easily. And just this year, that's starting to change. And on the rainy days, they were wrestling a little bit. And I don't think Katie was liking it too much that she couldn't win all the time. But they were happy. And,
well, Katie's younger, isn't she?
Katie's the older one.
She is.
Yeah,
so she's just going to turn into bossy.
Right. She's already got him pretty much henpecked. So. But I got to tell you, Michael, it was so interesting to explain to my kids who had never seen rain in California. They'd literally never seen a rain that long in California. She was, I think, three months old the last time we had this much rain in California. So to them, it was like a total change of environment. Gave a good opportunity to talk about the drought and about water conservation and some of the important things that you can teach them at that age. So it actually turned out to be pretty fun.
You know, here's a weird fact about me. I'm a native Californian, and I have never seen it snow anywhere.
Really?
Not in our mountains or any place across the country. Yeah, isn't that
even
odd?
You've never actually seen snow?
No, I've been in it, but I have never seen it come down from the sky.
You know, a few years ago, I was driving down the 101
snowed
in March,
in
and it was starting to come down.
No,
this is just here.
Yeah.
Sure
I took my son out, and we made snowballs. It was really very fun.
On that same day?
Same day, yeah.
She was on the freeway. You were making snowballs?
Right. It was Canaan. It snowed in Canaan. Very strange. Hey, how's it going? Let's have a snowball fight. Michael, so even with all your travels, you travel all over the world. You've never stood in snow. Falling.
Seriously?
Okay, state-of-the-arts field trip. We're doing a remote location
from
Aspen tomorrow.
Oh, okay. That I will go for.
Well, now, Michael, tell me about your week. Did you go see some amazing theater?
You know, I did see a beautiful piece of theater that I was so happy to be at.
Was I in it?
You were not in this particular production,
this
but I think
Andrew
you've done this particular. I think you've done the production somewhere else.
What'd you see?
West Side Story.
Ah, yes, one of my favorites.
Of course, Jerome Robbins, based on his concept of that, and the book by Arthur Lawrence and Leonard Bernstein. Of course, the marvelous music and lyrics by Mr. Stephen Sondheim. At the Valley Performing Arts Center, one of our great theaters, as we always talk about here in Los Angeles. Have you been to that theater, the Valley Performing Arts Center? It's on the campus of Cal State Northridge.
I haven't. Yes.
It's a gorgeous space.
My God, it is truly spectacular.
Yeah.
It kind of looks like a smaller version of the Los Angeles Dorothy Chandler Pavilion.
Mm-hmm.
It's just beautiful, all glass. And
the acoustics are amazing.
Four stories, amazing. Yes, the acoustics are probably the best of any theater in Los Angeles. And this cast, this young cast of Eddie Egan, Ashley Marie, Marlene Martinez, Michael Starr, and Armando Yearwood Jr. as the principals in the show are spectacular.
Wow.
This is new, you know, for the Valley Performing Arts Center to be hosting Broadway musicals. This is their first season. And this production was brought in by Kathy Rigby and her husband, Tom McCoy, who have McCoy Rigby Productions down in La Mirada. And it was kind of a preview of what is coming into their own theater in a couple weeks from now.
So people still have a chance to go see this.
They certainly
production.
Do. And they will have a larger... appearance at the Valley Performing Arts Center in the Grand Hall was just for four performances over a period of Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
And isn't it directed by Richard Israel?
Richard Israel, who I know you've worked with before.
Yeah.
Yes. And he's one of my favorite directors here.
Yeah,
he's really
awesome.
Got quite a career going. So.
And, of course, a friend of the show kind of oversees that space there, Thor, who's, of course, amazing.
Thor Steingraber, yes.
He does an amazing job down there. They're just starting to bring in some of these musicals. Of course, Dreamgirls last year, really giving a new birth of life to the musical arts in the Valley. People haven't had that kind of venue to go see it at.
That's true. And coming up in May, ladies and gentlemen, is, of course, the classic Man of La Mancha at the Valley Performing Arts Center. And that comes up Friday, May 5th, May 6th, and 7th. So there are four performances to choose from there. And if you would like to see this beautiful show in this amazing venue, simply go to VPAC at CSUN. VPAC at CSUN. Valley Performing Arts Center Theater.org or call 818-677-3000.
Michael, I'm dazzled, man.
Well, it was really cool, and Justin Michael Wilcox was one of the stars of the show as well.
Amazing. Who did he play? Do you recall?
He played, now you're asking me the character's name.
Well, he could play any part in the show. That's the problem. He's so darn good. He could probably play anything there. So.
You know, I will tell you before this program's over.
It's interesting when you see a show.
You know what? He plays action.
That was the part I played all those years ago.
Did you?
Yeah. Justin's got such a great way about him. He could just as easily play, you know, a part in any musical, and he's one of those very versatile actors. Every time we have him on the show, though, I'm aware that his mind works 10 times faster than mine.
And anybody's.
It's amazing. Yeah. Boy, he can.
His star is on the rise here in the Los Angeles musical theater community, and he's getting all these great parts like this and leads in such shows as Singing in the Rain. He does it all. He's like a
singer,
triple
dancer,
threat.
Actor, yeah.
And to the nicest, most unassuming guy.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and of course, coming up this weekend, we've got a trip to the Falcon planned. Lots of fun things. But first, shall we get to these two amazing guests?
I think we should.
Today.
Absolutely.
An accomplished film, television, and stage actress, our first guest credit include such films as Tyler Perry's Why Did I Get Married? And Daddy's Little Girls. She was also a series regular on the television series The Fur Is Gone, Buried Alive, and The Bank of Mom and Dad. On stage, audiences have enjoyed her performances in The Baker's Wife, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and Then There Were None at the Distinguished Co-op in Hollywood, Actors Co-op in Hollywood, where she's currently appearing in the hit production of 33 Variations, which is just extended through March 26th. Please welcome Grayson Chadwick.
Wow, thank you, guys.
Now, are you an L.A. native?
I'm not, no.
You have done a lot of work, and obviously so much of what you've done has been varied period pieces as well, right?
Yeah.
And Then There Were None is one of my favorites. I played Lombard in that years and years and years ago. But what's been your favorite role that you've played so far at the Actors Co-op?
Oh, man. You know, Jekyll and Hyde was a true highlight. That was a really artistic show directed by Mary Jo Dupre. and playing Elizabeth was a character that's very different from me, which was really fun. But I also was in Pride and Prejudice as Lizzie Bennet, so that's probably, I mean, that's got to take the cake.
Right.
You know, something
tough
so,
to beat there.
Yeah, it's so romantic, you know. But yeah, I would say those are my favorites.
That's great.
As far as film goes, I was a zombie killer in a Lionsgate zombie film called Dance of the Dead.
Wow.
It came out years ago when it was on the indie scene, premiered at South By. So that would be my top.
Would you rather be a zombie killer or a zombie?
Oh, zombie killer.
I've always thought that makeup is... I have so many makeup friends who do these amazing prosthetics for The Walking Dead, Fear the Walking Dead, and that sort of thing. Really amazing pieces. I always thought that makeup would be really fun to work in.
You know, I'm a fan of the Actors Co-op and their work there, and I've seen many productions throughout the years that they do there, and they've got those two spaces, right?
Yeah.
There, the smaller space and then the larger spaces.
Right, we have a proscenium and a black box,
right.
And I'm actually pulling double duty here today. Because I'm promoting 33,
yes,
which is extended, and I'm also producing the next production,
wow,
which is
Cat's Paw. Yes.
My goodness.
They're
going to
be running
goodness.
The same time as well.
In separate theaters, correct?
Yes,
cool.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
let's talk about that. So you as an actress, you are a producer. Do you have what is your sense of producing? I mean, do you love it? Do you like it? Is it difficult for you? Is it challenging? Is it something you'd like to do in the future?
I have discovered that I love it, actually.
Yeah,
yeah, I kind of like crunching numbers. It's
sort
of weird. and I like pulling together an artistic team. I like being at the beginning of the process, mm-hmm, and seeing it all the way through. You know, we don't always get that luxury. So
yeah,
it has been really fun.
It's a lot of responsibility.
It is. It is. And I'm really thankful to the co-op for, you know, bringing me on, hiring me this season to do a show there. It's really exciting. And the artistic team is awesome. So they're making it just a total dream. We have some really knockout.
Who are you working with?
We're working with David Potts,
mm-hmm,
who is Emmy Award-winning set designer.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen Rothman is our director, and
wow,
he has worked, as you know, everywhere. Been artistic directors at many different theater companies.
Thomas James O'Leary, too, is that correct?
Yeah. That's for 33
Variations.
Yes,
Thomas. One of our favorites.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
We love
yes.
great
work. Oh, he said to say hi.
Oh, did he?
I got a little email.
He's a great talent, no doubt about it, and a great ambassador for the arts in Hollywood as well.
Yeah.
So, lots going on at the Actors Co-op. How many productions does the Actors Co-op do each year?
We do 5 main stage productions and then 2 what we call co-op twos.
Wow.
So those are smaller budget, you know, just passion projects.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about 33 Variations and
okay,
what can people expect by going to see it? I know it's been a hit play so far and it's extended again through March 26th.
You know, when you're in something, it's kind of hard to fully describe it because you're not watching it. But what people are saying is that it's emotional, it's raw, it's moving, it's powerful. I feel like the biggest response we've gotten so much from people is that they can really connect to it. You know, the story is about, it's twofold. It's following Beethoven as he's trying to finish some of his masterpieces,
mm-hmm,
his variations on a Diabelli piece, and through the process is going deaf. So he is fighting, ugh, struggling to finish his work before he loses all of his hearing. And then the other side of the story follows a woman, Catherine Brandt, who is, she's been diagnosed with a terminal illness, and she is fighting against time to finish her work, which is discovering why Beethoven became obsessed with a piece of music.
Wow.
And why he wrote 33 variations on something rather than just one, which was, mm-hmm, what was requested. So, yeah, it's a really...
And this is true information, right?
Well, the Beethoven stuff is true, yes. Diabelli, a publisher at the time, went to many composers and said, can you please write a variation on this piece of music? And I want to publish a book with all of these famous composers. Everyone has their own rendition, their own variation on it. And so he, for whatever reason, he turned it down at first. He thought it was mediocre. He was like, I don't want to work on that.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden something switched and he became consumed. He couldn't stop. I mean, it was years that this was drawn out. And Diabelli was like, I've got to publish this piece of music, like this book. So that is like the super fascinating part.
Hmm.
And then the fictional part is about a woman who, while she's fighting to stay alive, she becomes consumed with figuring out why he's consumed with this piece of music. So it's twofold. And then in the process is the character, my character, the daughter, who they're a bit estranged, and she ends up being the caretaker of her mom.
Now, this is obviously a dramatic piece. Is there music incorporated into it as well?
Yeah.
You get to hear a lot of Beethoven's and Mozart's music.
Yeah,
is that
so that's
amazing.
What's exciting is that we have a live pianist, and he's playing all the variations on stage.
It looked amazing, yeah.
It's really, you know, and the tech aspect of this show, I think it's just... We knew it was going to be a magical piece, mm-hmm. but it's becoming more magical than we even thought, you know. And when a show comes to a close, it's hard to say goodbye sometimes. So kind of grappling with that.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to the amazing Grayson Chadwick today about 33 variations on stage now at the Actors Co-op. And tickets are available by calling the Actors Co-op at 323-462-8460. Again, that number is 323-462-8460. You can, of course, visit them online at www.actorsco-op.org. So lots of ways to go get tickets for this extended because audiences were asking for more tickets. Is that correct?
Yeah, we've
That's
been
a cool
sold
thing
out
to have.
The last few weeks. Well, almost the entire run. And then, like, the reviews have just been really awesome. So we're really blessed. We're really excited to be a part of the project.
I extend most of my shows because I'm worried that I haven't gotten it right yet. But this is different, I guess. This is a different
thing. Well, there's
point.
That, too. I finally, last weekend and the fifth weekend, was like, oh, that's what that moment is, you know?
It's such a great thing in theater. I think, you know, we talk so much about the arts here, and there is a very stark difference between the live arts and the taped arts or the recorded arts, and that you really do feel like you get something new out of every live performance, which is why we always tell people mm-hmm. to get off your chairs, go on out and see some live theater. This is obviously a great one to go see.
Now, it's not a musical necessarily. It's a play with music.
But there's a surprise in there.
Really? Because I noticed there's choreography credit here.
Yeah, Mozart come in and make an appearance.
There are a few surprises. I don't know if I should say.
Do you dance in this?
Well, I don't know. I'll leave you lingering. But Thomas James O'Leary, as you said, as our director, is just amazing.
Yeah.
He's really mastered this piece, and people have said it's almost choreographed because it's so transitions are so smooth and, mm-hmm. and just artistic, you know.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
Well, that's lovely. We saw him, we were introduced to his work with Next to Normal.
Yes, yes.
That he did a brilliant production of. And in fact, it was kind of the first time it had ever been done in Los Angeles in a small, intimate, you know, Equity Waiver Theater.
Right.
And it really worked there. In fact, yeah. I liked it so much there because when I saw it originally come through town as a large production at the Amundsen, I just couldn't get the music because the sound in the Amundsen, first of all, does have some problems every once in a while, and that kind of music seemed not to be friends with the sound system there. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. a lot of people got up and kind of walked out.
Oh, wow.
Not in droves or anything like that.
Yeah.
But it was challenging to sit there for that long of a period of time and listen to that score, which basically they were screaming.
Yeah.
And that really is tedious, you know, to your nerves and the pleasantry of going to the theater. But boy, oh boy, when we saw it, we were together, Andrew and I, and we saw it at, what is that theater? Pico Playhouse.
The Pico Playhouse
and
there, yeah.
It was captivating.
And that's a small house. If you have any warts in your production at that house, they're very visible. And I thought what Mr. O'Leary did that was so fascinating was he said, listen, we're going to focus on these characters strictly, as in everything that happens is going to be based around the characters. That means the set was tailored to the characters. He didn't try to do anything that was showy. It was really very functional to tell the story of the people. I would assume that this production is somewhat like that as well. Yeah,
and you know what's interesting? I guess Tom has a trend of doing shows that were done in big spaces, and it's the first time it's done in an intimate, because that's the same with 33. It's actually the L.A. Intimate Theater premiere.
Interesting.
It was done at the Amundsen and mm-hmm. is now in a smaller intimate space, and it's been exciting to hear people who saw the production at the Amundsen say, wow, I came away and I took so much more because I can see so much more. I can experience it more with you. You
exactly.
Know? So Tom has a knack for that, for sure.
Yes, he does. Indeed, he does. Tell us about Cat's Paw.
Yeah, Cat's Paw. Cat's Paw is exciting because it's new territory, I feel like, for Actors Co-op. It's not a period piece. It's not there are zero accents unless, you know, the actor just happens to have one. And it's current. It's really current. It's about domestic terrorism taking place.
It's scary. A comedy, of course. I'm
yes,
sure.
Very, very uplifting piece.
What's the, so the plot is about domestic terrorism. Was it written just in the last few years here then?
Well, it was written, I think, in 2001.
Wow.
And then it was redone in 2011. I might have that first date off.
Obviously timely
so don't
material,
quote me
though.
On that.
What's the plot?
Well, I guess I'm dabbling with how much to tell you and how much to give away, but it is domestic terrorism. It's basically someone fighting for clean water.
Wow.
And what's interesting about it, especially with where our country is right now, no matter what part of the political spectrum you're on, what media plays in giving us our awareness of what's going on
right.
around us. So it's just really fascinating in that sense of how the media can spin things, how people think, you know, maybe this bottle of water that I'm drinking is better for me, when in fact it actually might have even more carcinogens in
wow.
it than something you get out of your tap.
Is that
so,
true?
I mean,
most bottled water?
Well, there are definitely reports on it.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I think those reports will come from correct me if I'm wrong, if this has anything to do with it, if bottled water in plastic is stored anywhere in a particular temperature or at all in the sun when it's delivered to a store, those kinds of things. I think that's where the concern really is.
Absolutely, yeah. So that's what this piece is about, is kind of fighting, grappling what we're told is true and what is real versus what might actually mm-hmm. be.
So. I heard a story recently, the much maligned city of Cleveland, which I think is actually a great arts town. They do some really amazing arts there, but it has had some struggles in recent year. Recently was featured in a Fiji water ad where Fiji said, because you don't want to drink Cleveland's water, as one of their taglines. And Cleveland went to the trouble to go and get a chemist to measure both waters, Fiji water as well as the civic water inside Cleveland. And Cleveland's was like 90% pure. And so they put out a whole campaign saying better than Fiji water, you know.
Which
I think there is a lot of marketing in
mm-hmm.
what people
of
believe,
course.
You know. And you realize so many different agendas coming at you mm-hmm. in this mass media market. What an important subject to
yeah,
talk about. That's great.
Absolutely.
Very cool.
And the playwright, of course, William Mastro Simone, which I like saying his name.
Right.
He is an American playwright, and he has written some beautiful plays here. Bang Bang, You're Dead, for which he won an Emmy Award, actually, a Daytime Emmy Award,
mm-hmm.
and was nominated for a Primetime Emmy for Into the West and The Burning Season.
Mm.
Yeah.
So now both of these shows, Cat's Paw as well as 33 Variations, they're full-length shows, correct? They're two-hour shows? They're,
yes.
Oh, great. So when people go into the theater, what is the one thing that you want them to get from Cat's Paw when they leave?
Oh, gosh. Our tagline for the show is what makes a good cause go bad.
Interesting.
So I think that is something that people can walk away with, that they can really sit on and think about. Like, we're all fighting for something in life, you know, whether it's your religion or your political beliefs or whatever it is, we all have things that we're passionate about. And at what point does it maybe go too far or not far enough?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I think it's just going to be a piece that people walk away with, like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to think
wow.
now. You know,
yeah.
I don't know where I stand on this matter anymore. And in that sense, it's good because it's opening up perspective. So.
Well, this play is called The Cat's Paw, and it's obviously another great offering from the Actors Co-op. Again, that same contact information will work, 323-462-8460 or www.actorsco-op.org. What a great, these are two really
and
very great shows.
And Cat's Paw starts its previews on March 22nd mm-hmm. and March 23rd and opens Friday, officially March 24th, and runs through Sunday, April 30th.
A couple of great shows. If you had to pick one to do for the rest of your life, would you rather be on stage or would you rather produce?
Oh, on stage. I'm an
yes,
actor
Yes, there's
first.
Another job that I'm never going to get.
You're a ham. Is that right?
I guess.
Beautiful ham.
I just don't want to make money. I don't know.
We try to turn everybody into producers on this show. I just figured it opens up the work for the rest of us.
Well,
so.
That's a good thought. I'm open to both.
I know you must be very young because you look like you are. Are you someone who knew that you wanted to do this when you were very little? And if so, why? Who influenced you? What happened?
Well, I grew up with three older brothers, so I feel like they were so into sports that I needed my own avenue, and it just helped that my mom was a performer, and she also did directing, and I just sort of grew up in the arts. At first it was dance, and then it was singing and dancing and acting, and then I was a cheerleader first, and so I just always kind of liked that energy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I did know.
And where were you raised?
I'm from Atlanta.
Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the accent?
I think just growing up in the arts, yeah. I just never really had one.
You teach yourself to not use it very often, I think, too.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. maybe.
I used to come out here. I remember my wife would be talking to her. My wife's an opera singer, of course, and she'd be talking on the phone to her father in Texas, and all of a sudden she'd say, "Daddy," and I was like, "Who did I marry? Yeah. What just happened here?" But I think as an opera singer, she got such great diction and that yeah. sort of thing that I think it kind of trains you out of it. So it's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, yes, and Atlanta's a great place for the arts
yeah.
as well.
Yes, yeah, there right? is so much happening there right
what
now.
What is that one theater in particular where a lot of shows come through that are going to Broadway will come through?
And Fox, the Fox Theater?
No. It's one.
The Alliance?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, they do a lot of great stuff.
Yeah, they do.
Great universities there, too, training some really talented, talented people coming out of there.
And there's a new Pinewood. Do you know Pinewood Studios? They have, one studio in Australia, one in the UK, and then they're building one in Atlanta.
That's great.
So they have three in the world. And
I wonder why that
right
is.
There.
Why is
there's
that?
I don't know. It's beautiful there, first of all, and everyone's really nice.
Right.
So that helps.
Right.
But the tax incentives are just incredible.
Oh, okay.
So
I knew it had to be something.
Yeah.
I don't know. LA says it has tax incentives for the motion picture business to continue to be here all the time, but I'm not sure if they're as great as everywhere else.
I think they're trying to become more competitive.
Right.
Especially
Canada's
after the writers.
Canada's
right.
been killing
yeah.
it.
Right.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
absolutely right. Awesome. So now both of these theaters, for the Cat's Paw as well as for 33 Variations, are located very close to one another, right? They're on the same basic campus.
Across the
yes.
courtyard.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's easy to find, and it's just down on North Gower. So people can easily find that, and it's
easy
trip.
And they shouldn't be confused, because the address is actually a church.
A Presbyterian church, I
yes.
believe that's
and,
right.
And that's inside the complex is where these theaters are located.
But that's a cool area because parking
cool.
is relatively easy down there.
Well, we have free parking.
Oh, my.
So that alone should get you to
right?
the theater.
Right? No kidding.
Exactly.
And also, it's a great
giant
thing because there's lots of food around there, too. So
yeah.
if you're looking for a night out, these are two shows that you can pick one and go see one and then the next night go see the other.
Please.
How much
that would be awesome.
They cross over by a week. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, because we're extended. 33 was supposed to close this weekend. We're doing two encore performances on the 25th and 26th, but Cat's Paw opens on the 24th.
So, fantastic.
Yeah.
Again, those numbers and contact information. Now, tickets start as low as $20 for students, which is a great, great price, obviously, to go see some of these shows. And you even have some preview performances for Cat's Paw coming up. Is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, on Wednesday and Thursday,
and
I think 22nd, 23rd.
I saw this listed, but I can't imagine it being true. Are the previews free?
Yes.
That's the exact price that I can afford.
Oh, wow. Well, then I am looking forward to seeing you there.
That's amazing. So the previews, obviously, you can find out if you visit www.actorscoop.org. That's actorsco-op.org, or you can call 323-462-8460.
Now, is that complimentary attendance being offered specifically just for this show, or is that something the Actors Co-op offers in previews?
We always do one free preview,
yeah.
and for some shows we do too. So this one just
sweet.
Happens.
Sweet. Sweet.
Fantastic.
Yeah. There definitely is a contingency of people in the city that can't afford to go to theater, so that's a nice thing.
Well,
very nice thing.
Well, and I think there's some people out there who may be willing to go see a known show sometimes for the full price, but might want to test out an unknown show, and I think that's a great thing to
mm-hmm.
do, because if you like the preview, maybe you come back and bring a friend for one of the paid performances. But more than anything, you're supporting local playwrights and you're supporting fresh art that's being put out there, which is an amazing thing to do here in LA.
Yes.
So, you know what, Andrew? I don't know whether you told our guests this prior to my arrival here at the studio today, but did you tell them about how we end this program?
I did. I didn't want to scare them on
Very good.
Air, so
All
I
right.
did. I gave them a preview of what we do.
I was going to offer the information. Most of the time, we don't tell anyone.
Yeah, well,
What propelled you to do that?
The guests that we like, we tell. So if you've been on the show and you haven't heard before, it's because we didn't like you right off the bat. So these two we like so much. That's funny. We do this thing, and obviously our audience is going to be expecting us at the end of the show. Embarrassing moments. I was telling somebody about it the other day. It has an important purpose because so many people quit after they have something go wrong in this business. I remember seeing kids in high school or college mess up on a performance and think that it was the end of the world. I love seeing a live performance when something goes wrong and the actors have to react to it.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk more about embarrassing moments coming up here.
Yeah.
In a bit.
Right now, ladies and gentlemen, our next guest is the co-founder and managing director of the Independent Shakespeare Company, and has acted in and directed many productions there. He wrote and co-starred in Strange, Eventful History, a condensed story that takes the audience through 10 Shakespeare plays and 150 years of British war. He has also played Richard III, Hamlet, Iago, Macbeth, Henry VI, Benedict, Friar Lawrence, Dr. Pinch, and W.H. Ireland in the one-man show Solemn Mockeries by Richard Cheese. He appeared as Charles Dickens in The Gospel According to Thomas Jefferson, Charles Dickens, and Count Leo Tolstoy. Discard at the Geffen Playhouse.
Other theater credits include Mother
Discord,
Courage.
Discord at the Geffen Playhouse.
Other credits include Mother Courage at the Mermaid Theater in London with Glenda Jackson, and Hamlet, both in London and on Broadway with Ralph Fiennes. TV and film credits include Lawrence of America, Ironclad, The Understudy, and Perfection. He also writes the music for many of his company's productions, including numerous Dr. Pinch and the Pinch Tones vaudeville shows, as well as the original music for Red Barn.
But he's here today to talk about his work with the Independent Shakespeare Company of Los Angeles and their production of The Snow Geese, which begins preview performances tomorrow night, Friday, March 17th, prior to its April 9th opening at the Independent Studio in the Atwater Crossing Arts and Innovation Complex. Please welcome David Manville.
Welcome, David.
There you go, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
We're thrilled you could be here.
Remember, talking of accents.
Right? No kidding. Adding a little class to the show over here.
Absolutely.
You know?
Why is that? Why do the beautiful accent that you have... We all think you're much smarter than we are.
Well, that's why I moved here.
For that adulation, is
that right? It doesn't work the same way in England.
Oh, no, I'm sure it doesn't. And it probably doesn't work when an American comes to London either, on our side.
That's not
good. No comment.
I once saw Whistle Down the Wind. A friend was in it, which is Andrew Lloyd Webber's show in London, and I was watching it, and I remember thinking the American accents sounded like such a letdown, not because they were poorly done, but just because when you go to London, you want to hear those great London accents on stage, and watch an American play, I felt like I'd missed something. So, great to have you, David. Yes. We have a couple mutual friends, Lexi and Renee, two of your amazing helpers
Lexi
there.
Lexi and Renee, yes.
You have so many great, they're two of my favorites just on the planet, but you have so many great people involved with Independent Shakespeare Company. How did you find those people? Do you get volunteers just coming to you?
Well, Lexi and Renee is an interesting story because I just noticed them in the audience one night. We were doing Comedy of Errors.
Always meticulously dressed, aren't they?
They always come in some kind of costume. So, and this show was set in the 40s, and they were in these great 40s outfits. They were sitting right down the front, and they were playing a drinking game. Well, one of the plot devices in Comedy of Errors is that there's a chain that, you know, something to do with the prostitute.
In Shakespeare? Yeah. Oh my goodness, I would have expected. So.
So every time the word chain was mentioned, and they would drink, and I'd never realized how many times the chain was mentioned in Comedy of Errors, but these girls are knocking back these drinks, and I sort of twigged it before the end of the first half, and then I went off and told the the people backstage, and then we came on, and then we introduced ourselves afterwards, and we became friends, and now they're sort of part of the crew. They volunteer the next year to work on Macbeth, and they were the blood cleanup crew.
Very, which was a big job for that show, obviously. So, well, obviously they're great, and you've got a great season coming up there. But Snow Geese is a little bit unusual. Can you tell us about how that came about and how you decided to do it as part of your season?
Sure. So we do the Griffith Park Free Shakespeare Festival every summer, and that's our main thing. But about 6 years ago, we moved into a permanent rehearsal space, and we decided that, you know, we could probably fit 50 chairs in there, so we started doing little shows in the off season, and now it's become this theater and its own thing in its own right. And this actually be our last production in that space, because now we're moving to a larger indoor theater.
Wow.
Which will be happening at the end of the year. But Snow Geese is sort of a departure for us, because
very
Shakespeare
much.
is, you know, our style is quite presentational, mm-hmm. and, you know, there's no fourth wall. We're very communicative with the audience, and to do a play that's from the world of realism is very different for us. So it's quite exciting, and, you know, it's a great cast. We've got about seven of our best actors in this show, so it's really fun to see them tackle really different material.
Fantastic.
And the plot of this is about an American family, right?
Yeah, it's set in 1917, and it's an American family. They have a shooting lodge in Syracuse. Mm-hmm. The father's recently died, and one of the sons is about to be shipped off to fight in World War One, and he's got a day pass to come home for a final shooting party with his family. And what he doesn't know is the family is on the brink of financial collapse, and everyone's trying to keep this from him, because why does he need to know that? You know, he's going off to fight in France and might never even come back. So it's over the course of a day, you know, this sort of turns into pyrotechnic.
Emotional
journey, which is it's extraordinarily well written. It's a, you know, Sharp White is an amazing playwright, so we're really lucky to have them. This is the West Coast premiere. It's only ever been on Broadway.
And when was it written?
I think he started it in 2008, 2009, but it was on Broadway 2013, I think.
Has independent Shakespeare done modern plays ever before? Is this really the first one?
We did a new musical that I wrote, co-wrote with
Red Barn, of course.
With Melissa Charles. That was a couple of years ago. We've done new adaptations of classic plays, like a new translation of Cyrano. And Son of Mockeries was a one-man show that we took around a bit. So we've had a little bit, but this is now sort of getting slightly more serious about producing new work. So
it's great.
Taking it to the next level.
Oh, I'm glad that you're reaching out into that arena. That's
and
great.
You met Miss White some time ago, 20 years ago, right?
Mr. White, yes.
Mr. White, excuse me.
When I moved to America after having done Hamlet on Broadway, he was one of the first sort of friends I made over here, and it was a group of people that would meet once a week and read Shakespeare plays and just sort of toss about ideas for producing theatre and then sort of give up, because how could we possibly ever do that?
You just described half of Los Angeles.
Right. and Shah, a splinter group of that became this group that would pair actors with writers, and the writers would have to write something that was for the actors. And Shah wrote a one-act play for us.
I love that.
Which was really fun. It was about a chunk of Michigan that had splintered off in a cataclysmic explosion and gone spiraling off into the universe. And 20,000 years later, this piece of bean curd had evolved into a sentient being, and that's what I played. So it was like,
what, you played the bean curd?
I was the bean curd. Yes, my catchline.
Weird.
Was,
I didn't see that as your lead credit on your resume.
No, it was on there for a while, you know.
Now, who did you play in Hamlet?
The one on Broadway, yes. With Ralph Fiennes. I was Rinaldo.
Wow.
Which is a part that's often cut, and I was very lucky that it wasn't.
So you went from Rinaldo to bean curd.
To being kind, yes.
That's amazing. What an amazing artistic journey that must be. Now, this is interesting because Snow Geese is obviously not in Griffith Park. We want to let people know that. It's in a different location, the location you were talking about earlier. But people can still go to the Independent Shakespeare website to get tickets. Is that correct?
That's right, yes. Everything's there, iscla.org.
And, of course, the phone number there is 818-710-6306. But if you just Google Independent Shakespeare, obviously that will pop up. There's a lot of really good opportunities for you to see this show.
You know, Andrew, our host, my co-host here, is a wonderful actor as well. And the first time that I saw him on stage was in a piece that had to do with Shakespeare and the Beatles.
That's right.
Shakespeare and the Beatles?
The music of the Beatles and Shakespeare.
This was developed by Cool Britannia, a local company that had decided to pair Shakespeare pieces with their Beatles song counterpart. So, for instance, I did a Taming of the Shrew scene where I played Petruchio, and then after that we did Hey Jude. Different things like that. So we had a lot of interesting things put together.
I love that idea.
It was really cool.
Great idea.
Alan, you know, my father's on Hey Jude.
Really? As one of the voices in the...
Well, he was the second trumpet player in the London Symphony Orchestra.
Because there's a chorus part there where they have, like, people...
Well, you know
voices.
What happened to him? He was booked to play on it.
Okay.
And then he had a lunchtime gig with the LSO, so he had to leave. So the story all through my childhood was that he never played on Hey Jude. And then one day, a few years ago, I asked him, what actually happened there? And he said, well... You know what? What was interesting was I got paid twice because I'd never played the trumpet, but then I came back after the concert and they were still going, so I had to clap and sing Na 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 Na. I was like, wait a minute, you sang on a Beatles record? You know how much cooler that is than playing a trumpet?
That's amazing. So he's the official fifth Beatle now, we can all say.
He is, yeah.
That's amazing. What a great story. This project was exciting because you realize how universal Shakespeare was.
Yeah.
So, for instance, if you're doing Hamlet's To Be or Not To Be, we paired that with A Day in the Life. Song I blew his mind out in the car. And it was fascinating to see that Shakespeare wrote about such universal topics that you can pluck one out and put it almost anywhere in time and it still reads true. That was an education and a lot of fun.
Well, I think there's a lot of similarities in Shakespeare and the impact on his society in the in the 1580s, 90s, and 1600s, and the Beatles in the 60s. I mean, it's they were sort of epochal changes happening, and they were both those artists were at the forefront.
Yeah, both had long hair hippies running around.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, it's we talked about Lexi and Renee, who I met earlier. I actually met them when I took a contract with the Renaissance Festival years and years and years ago, playing Lord Leicester. And everyone there, I think, says that same sort of thing, is that the Renaissance was such a time of change that we really did have a second Renaissance in the 60s. It's a cool through line that you have in life to read and see how much Shakespeare influenced that time in American culture.
And we've used some Beatles songs in plays. I don't know if we had permission, but
look, if Paul shows up, you can talk to him about it, you know.
and International Shakespeare Company is also very generous in helping people see their productions. This season, 20% of the ISC studio tickets are offered for free to undeserved youth and families on a limited income and other members of our community that typically do not have access to the performing arts. And there is also a limited number of free tickets available to anyone basically who needs them. Is that right?
Yes. We've been, and the last studio show we did was A Midsummer Night's Dream, so that was a great opportunity to get some schools groups in and really sort of. You know.
And I believe that too. I'd love to hear you say that because children need to be exposed to this type of work.
I think so, and I think that there's a lot of emphasis put on school taking work to schools, but I think there's a whole different element about getting kids to go to the theatre because it's not just seeing the play; it's actually teaching them how to be in that environment.
Exactly. Etiquette as well. Well, you're absolutely right. Yeah, and this is a fun atmosphere. Obviously, the studio space may be a little bit different, but the atmosphere at Griffith Park, people sit outside. They bring food very often. Is that correct?
And you can bring picnics, relax. And it's huge. I mean, we get 2,000 or 3,000 people there some nights. So, and in the studio we've got 49 seats. So,
and in a little bit of a change in venue.
Yeah. And in the park, every seat is free. So,
and right. There's something I think magical about seeing Shakespeare in that kind of a setting. You know, it's like when you go out to the Theatricum. Botanicum, Will Gear's theater. That's always such a, you know, talk about an experience of going to theater. That just from the moment you're just driving up that, you know, highway and you arrive at the premises and then make that walk to that theater.
Yeah, it's a real
very
event,
magical.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's critters sometimes that make it on stage and do their thing. And it's very
and of course, Ellen, who we've had on the show, is such a patron of the arts. She loves talking about Shakespeare and about the power that it has in people's lives. So,
absolutely.
Obviously, we're talking about Snow Geese here today. And Snow Geese runs from March 17th, so coming up here this weekend, through April 9th. And it's obviously a great show to go see. But more than anything, you can get out there and you can find out more about independent Shakespeare as well, right?
Absolutely,
yeah. And we have our season coming up in the summer soon. We're doing Measure for Measure and The Two Gentlemen of Verona.
Ah, two of my favorites.
Lovely.
Great shows.
David, when was your aha moment? When did you realize that you wanted to be an actor and you wanted to direct? And
I can't remember not wanting to be an actor. I was just told that I was always going to be an actor, so that's just what I did, you know?
That's interesting.
I never wanted to be a director, but I've become one.
Mm-hmm. Through the osmosis.
Out of necessity and miserliness as a producer, I am a director. I mean, in most productions, I'm a backseat director, but in the last few years, I've started doing it more and more. You know, so we have a very particular way of working in the company, so it's actually hard to find directors that really want to go along with our particular style. So more and more, we just do it in house.
Can you give us an example of what some of that would be?
Well, I mean, we started the company as really exploring what it was like to work within Shakespeare's limitations, or rather, you know, what faced him in his theatre when he didn't have artificial sound or lights, or and they had a very different attitude towards verisimilitude on stage. So, and there wasn't really the notion of a director back then, so it was much more of a sort of collective. So the early productions, we didn't have a director. We had, you know, everyone sort of free for all, which
sounds a lot like parenting in my house.
Well, it's a bit of a nightmare, yeah. But eventually, you know, it becomes obvious, you know, who's in charge. But still, it really is about inspiring the actors to feel that they're representing their own work on stage rather than trying to fulfill the vision of one person. So, you know, that's the modern sort of, you know, regional theatre jobbing director is used to a very particular set of circumstances.
Right.
They're going to talk to their design team first. They're going to, you know, and they expect to have, you know, a lot more control than we're willing to give up. So, you know, it's a very collaborative process, and I mean, you know, and pretty much everyone would say that, you know, they're collaborative, but this it's just collaborative in a different way. So that's kind of why we want to work sort of from in-house and with a, you know, select few.
But you do have open auditions, is that correct?
Oh, yeah. We just had our open call.
Can you tell me a little bit? We have so many young actors here in Los Angeles that come out here, and Shakespeare is such a great way to get your training. When the young person comes in to audition, what kind of audition pieces do you like to see from young performers who maybe are auditioning straight out of college?
Well, one of the best Shakespeare pieces I saw a couple of years ago was a young woman who did the chorus speech to the beginning of Henry IV, Part 2,
wow.
Which nobody does. It's called Rumor. Mm-hmm. And it's not really a character. It's just explaining a set of circumstances. But when you're doing an audition for our company, you know, we don't really, not really interested in whether you can, you know, burst into tears at the drop of a hat or do, you know, shout and scream and all that stuff. We want to know, you know, how are you physically? Can we hear you?
Your cadence.
You know, can you make sense of your words? You know, especially at an open call where we're just meeting you for the first time. Those are the things that we're really looking at. So to a degree, it doesn't really matter what you're doing. But I think a lot of people pick these really big, pitched, dramatic speeches that happen in the middle of a moment of a play that are very, as an audition monologue, are very dislocated from
the rest of the story.
Yeah, exactly. And so you know, you get people coming in doing speeches from Julius Caesar, or see a lot of Hermiones from The Winter Tale, and you know, and there's a lot of Sturm und Drang. And I prefer to see a comic speech or a speech where, you know, it's connecting some sense. I don't really mind what people do as long as you know, we're really getting a sense of can you talk and stand up.
Yeah, which are both important things to do.
Right.
I've had trouble with those, particularly on St. Patrick's Day coming up here soon. So the shows we're talking about here today are The Cat's Paw at the Actors Co-op, as well as 33 Variations, and Snow Geese, which is produced by Independent Shakespeare Company. And the website for that is www.iscla.org, or you can obviously call 818-710-6306.
Absolutely. Good stuff. This weekend,
that it
right?
is. That it is. Lots of good theater for people to go see.
Absolutely.
So, and now, embarrassing moments.
Wow. You can't stop Ed Hall. He just says what he wants to say when he wants to say.
You know that voice, Ed Hall? Yes.
Well, a good friend of the show and from The Tonight Show. Obviously, this is our little bit, and that was our entire budget for the year that we spent on that sound cue, just so everybody knows. This is a bit where we ask our guest on the show to tell us something that happened to them that was so embarrassing that they almost quit the business. You've been warned today, so now the bar is even higher. Does anybody have one they'd like to share? And everyone goes silent.
You want me to go first?
David will go first, coming from a man that is bold enough to wear a T-shirt that has the hybrid of two words on it, and it comes out Fexy, F-E-X-Y.
That's a folio S.
Nice, very nice.
Yes, that's embarrassing enough.
What is your tale, sir?
Okay, well, you're talking about Hamlet on Broadway, the very first rehearsal in London for that. I was a young man. The director goes, okay, so I think we should just read the play through without a break. I don't know how many cups of tea I'd had before that, but it became clear that was a bad idea.
It's
about
3.5 hours.
Like 2 hours into it. By the end of it, I was absolutely bursting. So, without wanting to make, you know, draw too much attention to myself, I went to the loo, and immediately at the urinals, either side, Ralph Fiennes comes to my right,
oh my gosh.
And then the director to my left, and then they start talking about the play over me. Now, of course, the whole system is shut down, and nothing can happen. I'm terrified. So I just stood there for a moment and thought, "Well, okay, we'll just I'll just pretend that I went," and then I left the room, and I thought, you know, I waited for about 5 minutes. I thought, okay, maybe I'll go back in, and I went back in, and they were still in there chatting, and they turned and looked at me and like, "Who is this strange kid that hangs around in the bathrooms? Why do we cast him?"
Oh
man.
Did you ever get to go?
No, then we had to go and terrible. Do like the discussion for the next 2 hours.
And to this day, he has medical problems from that, ladies and gentlemen.
Therefore, Fexy.
Oh, that's brutal. Yeah. Oh, but a great story. That may enter our Hall of Fame. Very nice. Grayson, do you have anything
for us?
He is
beet red. You are beet red.
I feel like I try to block out most embarrassing moments and do a decent job of it. But one that comes to mind, I was in Baker's Wife a few years ago that Richard directed.
Richard Israel?
Richard Israel. And there's, I don't know if you are familiar with the musical, but there's that long 9-minute song called Meadowlark.
Yes.
I didn't sing it, thank God. But so right before, like right after that scene, there's the scene where the bread is burning and it's fog coming out of the oven. You know, so we have a fog machine, but we can't leave it hooked up the whole time because of the cord and people tripping.
Of course.
So the oven has to be pushed up with the fog machine plugged in, and then the song happens. So we're moving the table. Someone, not me, trips on the cord, unplugs the fog machine in the middle of this transition, and I'm like, oh, shoot, you know, we need the fog. We need the fog. So I bend down to plug it back in, and the lights come up for the 10-minute song.
Oh,
so
no.
I'm, like, stuck on stage for 10 solid minutes in a, like, I'm crouching on the floor so that no one can see.
And that's
me.
Not a song you can there jazz was, hand your way
no,
through. So.
There was no escape. She's supposed to be completely alone. I was trying to, like, can I tip? No, I can't do anything. So I just similarly also had to pee. Was just stuck on
We're going to have to be sponsored by some sort of urinal cake here on the show coming up after these stories.
Or Pampers.
Or
That's
depends.
Right, or Pampers. That's right, Depends would be great. So that's obviously what a terrible situation to be in, but you got through it, and afterwards everybody came up and said, what an interesting choice to have that girl crouched on stage.
The entire cast came backstage and was taking pictures of me stuck on stage and videos, and I'm trying not to like lose it, but it was a good time.
As with all our great guests, these are great stories
today,
Michael.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, David, and you, Miss Beautiful there. Thank
Miss
you
Grayson,
very much for being part
so
of this.
We are so grateful for you guys being here today. And more than that, we want to remind our audiences how many great pieces are going up around L.A. Get out, go see live theater, support the local arts here
Absolutely.
In L.A. and around the world.
And I meant to tell you, what a beautiful first name you have.
Oh, thank you.
Grayson.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks so much for having us, guys.
It was
a real
pleasure.
Honor.
Our pleasure. we got to tell you guys, obviously, these are two of our favorite groups, but there are so many wonderful groups out there doing theater right now. Log on to Performing Arts Live. Go see what else is going on. Visit our guests today after the show. Tell them how much you enjoyed listening to them. And more than anything, support live arts in California.
Indeed.
Michael, where will I see you next week?
Next week, you will see me on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.